Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hi, welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo, and we've got an interesting hour today, especially with our guest, Mr. Jim Maroney. He is in Hawaii at this time, so we get to talk to someone that's enjoying sunshine, and for those in the Northwest, we envy you. We are going to say we envy you, Jim. We are having rain, and gray skies, and more gray skies. Of course, that's what's come with the Pacific Northwest, and other people in the country are freezing to death, and you're over there enjoying the golden glows.
I am. I feel a little bit sad for everybody, but not too sad.
No, I don't think you're sad at all. Don't give me that. Your voice doesn't indicate any sadness here, and none of us would feel sad either if we were over there. But regardless, Jim, I find that the subject of extraterrestrials absolutely fascinating. I've met so many people who have had their own personal experience. There's a member of my family who had a tremendously intense experience, and ETs are a part of her life. Now, you put together this book, the Extraterrestrial Answer Book, and I love the cover on it because I just think it's fascinating how they put the imagery together. But what I really found awesome was that you're the current executive director of the Alberta Municipal Health and Safety Association. You live in Calgary. And I have to be a little sassy here. Do you ever have people saying they have you as the executive director of the Municipal Health and Safety Association and you're talking about ETs? Whoa!
I'm sure it probably goes through some people's minds when they start seeing my background and what I've been working with, and obviously I still work intimately with provincial government officials and a number of other areas as well. So I wouldn't doubt it at all that they can, you know, think a little bit like, oh my goodness, you know, what is this guy talking about, and where is his mind at with respect to this whole UFO phenomenon? Because even today, it's still an area of great controversy, and we're still at the very early stages of trying to understand what's actually going on.
What I find so intriguing is that I will talk to people, and if you ask them, do you believe that there's life on other planets? 98% of them will say, well, of course. They'll say this, that, or the other. And then they really get, I would say, using an old-fashioned term, gun-shy at discussing things in length unless you open up a door for them to have conversation. It's so amazing the duplicity that we exhibit, and especially governments that will say, well, no, we don't want this. When you have millions of people around the globe that have seen things. Now, extraterrestrials is one thing. Unidentified flying objects is something else.
Right.
But you go into this in depth. Share with us. Before we do that, let me give a quote that you have right in the beginning of your book by Arthur C. Clarke, who just died, I think it was a year ago, 2 years ago. Hasn't been gone that long. And this man was the leading science fiction writer in the world. And as far as I'm concerned, was very psychic, even though he would debunk. He had a series that he put together where he would often debunk people that claimed to be psychic. But this man's writing was so futuristic. I mean, let's face it, he did Odyssey, you know, 2001 Space Odyssey. But his comment was, sometimes I think we're alone in the universe and sometimes I think we're not. In either case, the idea is quite staggering. So I think he walked a very fine line, and through science fiction, he, like Gene Roddenberry, looked forward and had a vision and had an understanding that in the world that he lived in, people would say, you're nuttier than a fruitcake. The only reason they didn't put him in an institution is because he had this phenomenal skill with writing and had this articulate manner. But it's really interesting. A lot of people have been put in mental institutions because they did have psychic ability. People said, you're nuttier than a fruitcake. But nobody knew what to do with it, and it can still even happen today. But what was your experience?
Well, my experience really occurred way back in 1987 when I had actually a direct encounter with beings that are not from this world. And even to that point in time, Donna, I really hadn't considered, you know, what extraterrestrials would be like, or you know, I really thought that there was life out there, and I thought that maybe even there was something to this whole UFO phenomenon idea. But back in 1987, you know, it wasn't as prominent as it is today. And even then, I really didn't give a whole lot of thought into what these beings would be like, or what they wanted to do, or why they were here. And anyway, I kind of thought maybe if they were here, they were probably just studying us from a distance, you know, maybe kind of cold, detached beings or whatever. But in 1987, I was actually, I had an encounter experience, or an abduction experience, and it occurred, you know, in the middle of Canada, a little place just outside of Winnipeg, Alberta. Or, sorry, Winnipeg, Manitoba. Strange name, Winnipeg. But it actually occurred in a truck stop. And from that particular experience, it changed everything that I thought I knew about the world around me, and really put me on a completely different path of understanding and exploration into what the phenomenon is, and what it's doing, and why it happened to me, but why it's happening to so many other millions of people. So the intent really of the book was really just to try and bring together a number of different ideas and provide anybody who really wants to know more about the subject the best information that we have today on that particular subject.
Now, this, since 1987, now that is over 20 years ago.
Yeah,
so in today's world, with all of our technology, with all of our sophistication relative to same, and with people talking as openly as they do today,
right?
When you are speaking on this topic, or you are interacting with others, how have you been received as far as people coming forward and saying, gee, can I tell you about what I experienced? Could you help me with it?
That's a really good question, Donna, because I was really quite nervous, frankly, to be talking about any of this. And it took me a long time, really, to get to the point where I thought that my career was stable enough that, you know, I felt confident enough to basically speak openly about it, and not worry about, you know, losing my job as a result of it. And really, the intent was just to educate people about what was actually happening. And what I found was that by far and away, the thing was, is that my fears are really unfounded. I have so many people coming up to me and talking to me and asking me more information about the subject. They want to know more about it. They're interested in about it. They're intrigued about it. And that's what the big surprise was for me.
Your experience involved a number of unique variables.
Yeah.
One of those variables was that they were able to remove you from your vehicle, and it's like watching Star Trek, where they're in the transporter, they're demolecularized, and then they're put together at whatever their destination is.
Right.
And you had an experience like that.
Yeah, the experience is pretty complicated when you really break it down into its, you know, variable parts of it. And it happened so quickly and so fast, you know, it's just amazing. I still don't really understand the technology that they use, obviously. You know, I can only make assumptions based on part of my experiences of it. But it's really a technology that's probably, you know, not just 1,000 years more advanced than us, but maybe up to 1,000,000 years more advanced.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to them, it seems that the matter and energy work synonymously with each other, and they somehow can manipulate either of them pretty easily. So what happened was that they actually took the vehicle and myself up into another ship, I guess, best way to describe it. And even to this day, I mean, I have no idea how big this ship was, but it was huge. You know, I didn't see any windows, but, you know, the hallways that I walked and where I was, it was just massive. You know, this thing was as big as, you know, it's almost a sense that I was in a hospital. That's, you know,
mm-hmm.
you know what a hospital building is like, a big hospital building. That's really the kind of the sense of the size of it when I was in there. You know, some of the places were two stories high. It sounds outrageous. I mean, I know how bizarre these tales might sound to somebody who's listening to the program, but I can assure you that it's with absolute clarity and sincerity that this is what I had seen. This is exactly what I had experienced when I was on board.
Now, you bring up different individuals that historically have been documented, and you talk about, in the first part of your book, about 1945, that era, and there have been records, there have been cultures that have spoken about people from other planets that have visited them, that have taught them agriculture, how to build things. There are things that they have been able to do because there were these people that came and taught them how they could have a better life, and then they left.
Right.
And I know in one culture they were called the Guardians. And
right.
The Guardians were there not to interfere, but to assist. And this, you go back into, I think it's the Hopi, you go back into the Aboriginal culture, you'll find that there are these stories. In fact, there is a particular group of Aboriginal people, they have a cave where they've got a whole star system. They say, this is where we came from. This is where we originated. Was in this star system. And you have other things. And today's world, in, they'll say, oh, that's ridiculous. Well, my goodness, we're beginning to discover. Because of the Hubble telescope, we are discovering that the universe is an extremely alive presence with this phenomena of birth and death. And it's just mind-boggling. It's
right.
Very humbling. And
it really...
It's amazing.
It really is. I mean, current estimates right now, we have about 400 exoplanets that we've discovered with the recent technological improvements that we've made, you know, with our systems and our space systems that we were able to look at planets and those types of things. But, you know, really current estimates right now, and these are relatively conservative estimates because we don't know how many Earth-like planets there are out there. But just in our galaxy alone, I mean, the estimates now are, and this is coming from scientists, like really staunch, strict scientific work that's being done, they're estimating around 30 billion Earth-like planets. So this is quite a larger number than was originally anticipated, and it really becomes from some of the research that's been done recently. So certainly life is likely going to be found prolific throughout the galaxy. The real challenge for us, and I think it's not just us, but it's for all cultures in the world, is to try and understand what's changing, why is it changing, and how is it going to affect us individually and as a society.
Mm-hmm. Now, there is a Dr. John Mack, who is a Pulitzer Prize-winning psychiatrist from Harvard University.
Yes.
And you talk about him, and he started into this thinking, these people really are hallucinating. They just
Absolutely.
Don't understand. They've had too much green tea. We are just not doing very well, folks. And
right.
He found these people were not making these things up. Tell us about Mack. He's a fascinating man.
He really is. You know, he was he's a gentleman that came out of Harvard, and he was really touted as you know, one of Harvard's pride and joy kind of guys because he did such exceptional work in his field. And he was intrigued by this idea that people were reporting encounter experiences. And so when he got into the field, he thought, you know what, I'm probably going to be able to ascertain that, you know, these people are suffering from some kind of mental illness or some new form of mental illness or, you know, there's some way I'll be able to explain it from a psychiatric standpoint. And when he got into it, he was shocked to discover that he could not categorize these people from a psychiatric standpoint. And when he published his work, I remember John Mack's words. He said, you know, he says, I was going against convention when I was going to publish my work. And then he was attacked, literally, by the very organizations that had supported him so vehemently in the past. And they said, you know, look, John, you know, I don't see these aliens. They're not out here running around in the streets. Like, why are you writing this material? And, you know, John defended his position and said, look, I used every scientific tool that we had and applied it in a very strict way to look at the situation, and I can only conclude that, you know, we have to reconsider what's going on here. It appears that these people are, in fact, telling us real experiences.
Mm-hmm.
And that was really a remarkable statement to make on his part. And obviously, I think the man was dedicated to the truth and dedicated his life into finding a healing path for those people who were struggling with the actual experience.
You have a chapter on intervention, and there's one sentence. You say, in the simplest possible terms, the human race has been placed in rehab. Boy, I read that sentence, and I said, mm-hmm. I wonder if they have places where we can shoot a few people, you know, just, you know, with transport them or whatever. Just pick them up, put them in rehab, and let's see if we can recycle them in some way. I mean, we have it on this planet in any given time, 200-plus wars going on. You hear all of the news about the horrific things that I call them the abuses to the planet. A lot of it was done in ignorance, and yet so much of it still is going on. Yet it is part of a process. And I just found your description very, very apt. And I wonder if maybe many times they look at us much like we look at rats in a lab and say, okay, this species seems to be doing okay. This one, I don't know. There may not be any hope for them, but let's check them out for another 100 years and see what they do. Just like we do with lab rats.
Right.
Because we hear over and over again, and you had a probe of some kind that you went through, and it, one time it was painful for you, yet the person that was there with you sent you a great deal of compassion and love, and mentally there was this communication capacity of telepathic conversation that was just absolutely fascinating.
Yeah. Really, from my experience with these beings, and I don't know where they come from. You know, I just know they're not from here, obviously. But there was this intense, tremendous amount of love and compassion and overwhelming sense of sadness. There was, you know, they're not this emotionally detached beings that are portrayed so vehemently out there and generally.
Mm-hmm.
And my experiences are quite different than that. Even though they were very difficult, they were also this other incredible aspect of this connection and love. They don't really see themselves as superior to us in any way. They just see us as a different expression of the Creator.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're not here to dominate us. They're just here trying to help us. And they want to do that in the most subtle way as possible. And unfortunately, what's happening is that this contact is really an intervention. And that's the way I describe it in the book, and that's probably the best way to describe it. And being an intervention, it seems forced. It's difficult for us. You know, the whole idea of this contact experience is probably happening, you know, 1,000, 10,000 years sooner than it should have. But, you know, our activities on this planet and towards each other have made this intervention and a rapid intervention absolutely necessary. And this means it's going to be pretty stressful, you know, for us and I'm no doubt for these beings as well.
One of the points that you bring out in the book is about this huge room that's on the ship. You say it's gymnasium size. And
right.
You guesstimated that there were about 70 beds there, and they were all full of people, and they were in what you considered a special induced sleep so that they could be observed. And you also brought up something about cross-cultural contamination. Well, stop and think about when we travel to different parts of the world today in our world, we have to be aware that, one, we can transport viruses, which is something that has become a big issue with the H1N1, and there's other things, and they'll say, my goodness, in today's world, you can have someone in China end up in Hawaii, and you can have a pandemic result because of something that is being transported, maybe on their feet or, you know, whatever. And I just interviewed a woman this week who had her father die from a situation. The surgery was successful, but there was a contamination in the environment that he was in the hospital, and consequently he died from this serious infection because the antibiotics couldn't work. So this is something, when you bring that out, and it's something I've observed in many of the stories that I've read, and there's a couple, and they've been renowned for years. The husband and wife are both gone now. The woman's name was, I believe, Betty, and it's escaping me, right? I can see her face and see that of her husband, and just a very nice couple, and they ended up going through hypnosis trying to figure out what their nightmares were, what they were.
Oh, Betty and Barney Hill, you might think.
That's it. Thank you very much for supplying that, Betty and Barney Hill. And Betty actually recalled the star system that these people said that they had come from, and
right.
She had conversations with them. And they gave her the information. And it's just, nobody's going to believe you, but, you know, this is what's out there. So you have these documented situations, and like you said, they know how to bend the laws of time and space, but they're not, the key thing you emphasize here is we're not to look at them as gods. And so many people, when they hear about this, they think, oh, this is going to be some utopia that we need to be aware of. And it's not. It's not at all. These are life forms, individual life forms. They think, they analyze, and for some reason, they feel, whatever group they're representing, that we're worthy of their attention. But this has been going on for so long. What was it, 300 BC or AD or whatever it was, that some of the first written reports are? Different flying objects?
We will never know exactly how long they've been here or how long they've been aware of us. What we know for certain is that around 1945, 46, the phenomenon changed. And it changed dramatically in a way that had not been the same way in our previous history. And the way it changed was really a result of World War II, the end of World War II, and the beginning of nuclear weapon development.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And, you know, I believe those aspects of humanity's creation and its continuation of warfare has really galvanized their attention and their desire to try and help us and find a way to help us. You know, they're not going to enter in. I remember talking to somebody about this, and they said, well, you know, why don't they just come in and, you know, get rid of our weapons? And I said, well, you know what? Weapons isn't really the problem. You know,
mm-hmm.
our desire and propensity to use weapons is the problem. In other words, if you got rid of nuclear weapons, we're just going to find other weapons, basically, to hurt each other. So, you know, there's, even though it has changed the way warfare is fought, I believe that their perception was that, you know, something within our generation is going to have to change if humanity is going to survive over the next 20 or 30 years.
Now, you say that they seem to be pushing the advancement of technology for us and also being more aware of what I call the mind-body connection, the mind-to-cell connection. This I found a very interesting perspective of thought. What made you get to that assessment?
You know, it's just being in their presence. It's so incredible and difficult in some ways to describe. It was a feeling as if I was in kindergarten again, you know, that I had to kind of relearn everything that I thought I knew. And one of the things that became evident to me was that when I looked at the world after my experiences, you know, and I said, you know what, really what humanity's current problems are is the fact that our technology has simply outpaced our ability, our spiritual development. Maybe that's probably the better way to put it. So even though we have this wonderful technology, you know, we've been misusing it. We've been misusing it and applying it in the environment, you know, and we've obviously created weapons that are so deadly right now that if we actually decided to try and, you know, use them in a larger war, that it would be quite difficult for basically most of us to conceive the kind of damage that would actually result in that. So really for me it was like, you know what, technological development is not a bad thing, but really what's problem right now is that human evolutionary development, particularly our spiritual development, has been retarded in some way. It has not kept pace with our technological advancements. And that's really where the imbalance seems to be, have happened. So these beings are really not here to provide us with technology because they don't think that more technology is going to solve our problem. what their, you know, awareness is that, you know, humanity has to be more spiritually mature if it's going to survive over the next 20, 30 years.
Your daughter asked you a question, because obviously you had shared your experience with her, especially after 9/11, and she said, and I quote from your book, if the aliens are here to help us, why didn't they do anything to prevent that horrific picture on television, which, of course, was the Twin Towers collapsing? Why didn't they prevent that from happening? And that's quite a profound question. How old was your daughter when she asked that question?
Oh, she must have been probably about 16.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So she's a thinker.
Yep. Absolutely.
What was your response?
Well, you know, I looked at her and I said, you know, honey, I said, these problems are man-made problems. I said, they've been with us for a long time. They're going to continue to be our problems. I said, we all have, at some level, a responsibility for the way we're going to respond to this or react to this. And I said, and sadly, I don't think we're going to have the proper response that we need to in order to, you know, to this thing. I knew what the response was going to be. You know, it was going to be a military response. It was going to be dramatic. It was going to be intensely, you know, destructive. And it was going to likely not resolve the overall problems that, you know, generated this thing in the first place. And maybe going to more to a point, you know, it's really not their job to solve our problems. You know, humanity has to find a way to solve our problems. And I think, you know, when I talk to certain individuals who are studying in the UFO field, I mean, a lot of them have come to the same conclusion that, you know what, it would be nice to have some people out there in the universe that would come and try and help us. But ultimately, I think these beings would want us, you know, want humanity to grow up on its own and find our own way rather than, you know, try and take a cookie-cutter output of someone, you know, here's the way you guys need to do it, and we just implement. I don't think that's going to be the case. I think we have to kind of really want to get to that particular point and make the changes that we need to make.
You have a question that you pose in your book. What does the military fear? And in that section of your book, you talk about how in 1989, the IKI, the Institute of Space Research of the Russian Academy of the Sciences, the Soviet equivalent of NASA, sent the Phobos 2 spacecraft to Mars. And what happened is that it stopped transmitting, it disappeared, and they got some photos back, transmitted from the satellite, that showed a shadow of an unknown object on the planet's surface. And I'm reading this right from your book. The shadow was elliptical in shape and roughly 16 miles long.
Right.
And they don't know where it came from. They have no idea what it is. And how did you get this information on it?
This is actually available. I'll go back a little bit on this one. Part of the funding for that particular satellite was actually provided from some European investors. So when the satellite went missing, the European investors demanded some answers about what happened to the satellite. And they were not happy with some of the preliminary answers that came out because they had invested so much money into it.
Mm-hmm.
So they had a special meeting, actually, with the Russian representatives. And at that point in time, they divulged some of the information about here were the last images that the satellite gave us. And, you know, we don't know what happened to the satellite after that. So the images, obviously, that showed up were then basically released, and, you know, they were actually made public. They actually even made it into newspapers as well. And no one denied the reality of the pictures themselves. The big question became, you know, what were actually the pictures? What did the pictures represent, and what was actually in the pictures? So ultimately, I think that, you know, the military is certainly, at least some parts of the military around the world, are aware of the extraterrestrial existence and the extraterrestrial presence. But again, they're not really sure how to respond to them. They're not really sure what they're looking at. And ultimately, I think that if, you know, because of the world in which we live, they perceive that these beings might be a possible threat because of the technological, you know, advancements that they actually possess. And they treat them as such.
Do Jim Maroney has been my guest. The subject is fascinating. His book is very interesting reading. You're not going to find woo-woo through here. And there's so much good documentation and resources that you have available for people. But I especially liked a quote that you had in your science section. A new scientific truth does not triumph by convincing the opponents and making them see the light, but rather because its opponents eventually die and a new generation grows up that is familiar with it. And that was Max Planck, who was a German theoretical physicist who originated the quantum theory. And that is repeated over and over and over again, because so often science and various forms of thinking get stuck in their paradigms and they can't let it go. And that's why it's so hard often to move forward. But your book gives some very good insights, good information. If nothing else, it creates a process of thinking. And I think Gene Roddenberry picked up on that a long time ago, and he left us a legacy that moves on where no one has gone before. And I just absolutely love it. I think it's fascinating. I think that the information, I know people that have had a number of their own experiences. I've had mine. So I just think that it's good to question. It's good to be aware. And people like you writing about it, I have my hats off to you, because it really is something that could be in the minds of many, something to make fun of. So if you are interested in E.T., the Extraterrestrial Answer book, Jim Maroney. Jim, quickly, I know we're out of time. What's your website?
My website is AUFOSG.net.
AUFOSG.net is his website. Jim Maroney, M-O-R-O-N-E-Y. Again, the Extraterrestrial Answer book. Jim, thank you ever so much for being with me today. It has been a pleasure.
Thank you very much, Donna. You know what? This is a tremendous challenge for us, but I think we're really up to it. I think we have the people in place that we could really understand a lot more about what's going on, and I think that's what people want.
Absolutely. Enjoy Hawaii and those golden rays. And
I
we look forward
will.
To your next book. Take care. This is
Thanks
Donna
very
Sebo.
Much, Donna.
Yes, this is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We are going to be back in just a moment.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to DTaP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, ttap.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's T-T-A-P TTAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous at TTAP. 1-800-342-0717. TTAP.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Telephone lines are now open. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-815-9756 is our worldwide toll-free number. Now, for those of you that have had your particular paranormal experience, if you would like to share it, I would be delighted if you would send it to me. I'm in the process of putting together a book. I'm wanting to collect 100 stories of experiences that people have had. And the reason I want to put this book together is because I think it's important that we be open about what our experiences have been. Why? Because it enables other people to not feel so alone. So these are stories that people tell me. I'd love to hear yours. I've got a collection. So far, we've got about 25, and I'm aiming for 100. So if you've had a special experience, whether it's a near-death experience, astral projection, if it has to do with ghosts, if it has to do with someone from the other side coming and visiting you, I don't care what it is. It's your experience. Also, when you send it to me, be sure you include your contact information because that is very, very important. So I would love to hear your story. And, of course, we would give you a full representation in the publication. But send it via email to Donna@DelphiInternational.com. That's Donna@Delphi, D-E-L-P-H-I, International.com. Or you can send it via snail mail to the Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington 98497. And I just really am looking forward to the stories that are coming to me are wonderful. So if you have one and you feel comfortable in sharing it, do. It's really, I think it's important. I'll share my stories too in the book when it comes out. But I think that each and every one of us have our own experiences. And the one thing, after being involved in the work of mind for the many years that I have been working with it and reading and studying and learning, I've learned that there is absolutely no limitation to it. The skills and abilities that can be utilized are absolutely amazing. And it's always been a joy whenever I've worked with students to watch them become aware of this phenomenal intuitive process that they have within their physiological, mental, spiritual, and emotional package. And it's meant to be used as a tool. It's meant to empower you. So it's a joy for me to share, and I would like you to feel safe and comfortable in sharing your story as well. So do get it to me. Also, don't forget, those of you in the Seattle, Washington area, the Pacific Northwest Women's Show is coming up March 5th, 6th, and 7th. This is such an exciting event. Gals, it's all for you. Guys, you're welcome to come. You'll have the time of your life. But it's mostly gals that come out, and it is wonderful. It is playtime. And there's going to be all kinds of speakers, phenomenal vendors. So go to the NorthwestWomensShow.com. You'll find out all of the information about tickets and the various events that are going on. I've put together a 6-speaker forum. We did this last year, and they said, please, would you like to do it again this year? We'd love to have you do it. And I said, oh, I'd love to. So I've got 6 dynamic women within a 3-hour span. The first hour, it starts at 1 o'clock. It'll go from 1 till 4. The first hour, we're going to be talking about money, identity theft, things like this. How can you become more successful? The second hour is going to be oriented towards energy healing. We're going to have 2 dynamic experts that are really going to be sharing some insights. And then third hour is going to be about animals, massage, how to take care of animals, understanding animals, working with animals. It is just going to be great. So I invite you, if you're going to be coming out, you know, come out 1 or 2 days of the show. There's just so much going on, you can't get it all in one day. So on Friday from 1 to 3, I'll be at the Girl Talk stage. Also, I have a booth. The booth is 407, and I'd like to invite you to come by, say hello. I'll also be doing many consultations for people, and I will have a lot of books available, as I always do every year. So you can come by, and maybe there's something that's going to someone that's some things there that are going to be appealing to you, and I would say that's why they're going to be put out for your reading pleasure. Donna Sebo here. Give me a call if you'd like to chat, 888-815-9756. Remember, all I need is your first name or your initial. Janet sent me the Optimist Creed, and I thought, this is really good. I like it. She said, promise yourself to be so strong that nothing can disturb your peace of mind, to talk health, happiness, and prosperity to every person you meet, to make all your friends feel like there is something in them, to look at the sunny side of everything and make your optimism come true, to think only of the best, to work only for the best, and to expect only the best, to be just as enthusiastic about the success of others as you are about your own, to forget the mistakes of the past and press on to greater achievements of the future, to wear a cheerful countenance at all times and give every living creature you meet a smile, to give so much time to the improvement of yourself that you have no time to criticize others, and last but not least, to be too large for worry, too noble for anger, too strong for fear, and too happy to permit the presence of trouble. Janet, thank you very much. I appreciate that. I really do enjoy getting these items from those of you that send them to me because I think it's good to be able to share good thoughts. I know there is so much trouble in the world. There are so many difficult things, but this show is about empowering you. We're all going to have clump in our life. None of us are exempt from it, but the key is if you have the right kind of support and if you understand that you do have a choice about how you're going to work with something, it makes all the difference in the world. I have faith in you, and I'll tell you, with all of the people, the thousands of people that I've interviewed during my 8 years of doing this show, I know how many wonderful, hardworking people are out there, and I know you, the listener, are very much caring about life. You want to do the best you can. So you want to hear good things. We already know about the bad junk. Let's take an attitude of being of the mindset that we're going to make a difference, whatever way we choose to do it, but it's going to be in a way that's going to be supportive, it's going to be progressive, it's going to make this life of ours a better experience because of who we interact with and how we choose to live our life. I got this cute story from Rosemary, and I thought this was just adorable. Rosemary, I've known for a number of years, and this woman is known for really being tough. She's in her 70s, and she's just a doll. And she said, she sent this story to me. She said, Donna, you know, you wonder where I get my crusty tongue from. This could have been my dad when he died years ago at the age of 69. I have missed that delightful, crusty old personality ever since. Now, this is the story she sent me. I don't know who originally wrote it, and neither does she, but the woman that did write it said, I took my 92-year-old dad to the mall the other day to buy some new shoes. We decided to grab a bite at the food court, and I noticed he was watching a teenager who was sitting next to him. The teenager had spiked hair in all different colors, green, red, orange, and blue. My dad kept staring at him. The teenager would look and find him staring right at him every time he turned around. When the teenager had had enough, he sarcastically said to my dad, "What's the matter, old man? Never done anything wild in your life?" Well, this woman just didn't know what was coming next because she knew her dad, and she knew he was going to have a retort. She said, knowing him, I quickly ate up my food so that I wouldn't choke because I knew my dad was going to come out with something. And no, I knew he was going to have a good, good response. And so my dad did. In his classic style, he didn't bat an eye in his response to this teenager. He just looked him straight in the eye and said, got drunk once, had sex with a peacock. I was just wondering if you were my son. I just love that. I'm sorry. I cracked up before I finished the line. I know, but I just loved it. Yep. Yeah, just wondering if you were my son. Okay, I'm sorry. Okay, we're going to take a break. I know. It's okay. We're getting towards the end of the week. I just love this stuff. Anyway, you have a chance to go get yourself a cup of tea, maybe a cup of coffee, but don't go too far because I've got some good things to share with you, including a wonderful story about a woman named Thelma Gagnon. We'll be right back.
Enter the magical world of God's Kiss.
Johnny finds himself at the entrance to a large open valley, framed by high mountains rich in the brown-red colors of the earth. He stands in awe, even a little fearful of the mountain's great size. After all, he's just a little boy and not very tall.
God's Kiss is a beautifully illustrated children's book about a young boy's journey into a valley with children and animals from all over the world. They are gathering together to experience the wonder of love and beauty that will affect their lives forever. A talking book audio narrated by the author Donna Sebo accompanies this wonderful storybook, creating a special magic all of its own. This book package makes a wonderful gift for those special children in your life ages 3 to 10. God's Kiss book and talking book audio are only $19.95 plus shipping and handling, and the author Donna Sebo will autograph and personalize your book if you request it. Call 800-872-8852. You can also order through Donna Sebo's website, www.delphiinternational.com. That 800 number again, 872-8852.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-815-9756. Now, tomorrow, we're going to be talking with Michael Anthony. Michael has been a medic overseas, and he has written a book called Mass Casualties. Now, when he wrote this book, his purpose for writing the book was to let people know what our soldiers are really experiencing over there. And as a medic, the things that he saw and what he experienced, it's quite an eye-opener. Very nice young man. He's going to be on with us tomorrow. And then we are going to be talking with some great people next week. We're going to be talking with Bruce Zamelski. He is a former firefighter and paramedic, and he's written some very fascinating stories about his profession. Then we're going to be talking with Owen Fitzpatrick, and his publication is Conversations with Richard Bandler, who is considered the father of neuro-linguistic programming. And Owen goes around the world teaching the techniques that he's learned from Richard Bandler. Elementary Love Styles, we're getting close to Valentine's Day. Dr. Craig Martin is going to be with us on that subject. We're going to get into a little bit of astrology and a little bit of this and a little bit of that. Anthony Flaco is going to be my guest, The Road Out of Hell. This is his publication. It's a true murder case, and it's more than just murder. It's just something that the fact that he was even able to write it down is amazing to me. But it is a true story. It's totally documented, and you're just going to have to listen to the interview. That's all I can say. Makeup, Don't Break Up, Dr. Bonnie Wheel is going to be my guest. Just before Valentine's Day, good things to share, and I think you will enjoy all of the programming. So just keep it in mind, and different information is posted on the BBS website, so you have that there. Also, for those of you that would like to listen to the show on your phones, go to the homepage on bbsradio.com, and you'll find information about the wonderful opportunity you have to be able to listen to the show live on your phones, whatever it is that you do. I mean, there is so much that's advancing so quickly. I just feel like I blink and bingo, we've got some new aspect of technology. I told you I wanted to share a story with you about Thelma Gagnon. Since Valentine's is just around the corner, this really, really fits. She is a woman that loves hearts. And she said anything and everything about hearts. She became a collector. She said, I have a heart-shaped muffin pan. I have shelves inlaid with little hearts. I have knickknacks that are hearts. And she said, I just absolutely love the ones, especially, that have been given to me as gifts, because people say, oh, you're a collector. And I know how that is, because I've got a plethora of Scotties. So when people find out what you're collecting, they go, wow, this is great. I'll keep my eyes open. So she said there was just amazingly, she said, a waffle iron that did heart-shaped pancakes. I mean, it's just absolutely wonderful the way people remember this. And she said, even my husband did something special. Once he shared a scrap of steel that was shaped like a heart that he found at his welding job. So she said, I just have this serendipitous feeling about hearts. It seems like whenever they've shown them up in my life, there's just always a special blessing for me. Well, she went through a move to North Carolina from Maryland, and she said, our children were quite young, and I was looking forward to having a more relaxing lifestyle in our beautiful new home, which happened to be by a beach. But it didn't turn out that way. My husband couldn't find work, and instead of relaxing, I'd gotten a part-time job as a receptionist and ended up having to be full-time because my husband couldn't find work. The kids, well, they were going through big adjustments, trying to get comfortable in their new school. So she said, well, this one day I was standing outside with my husband, and I was watching him chop wood for our fireplace. I started groaning and moaning about things that weren't working right. I just don't feel right here, she said to her husband. And he just listened. He didn't fuss or make any remarks. He just listened because he knew she was venting. Well, he was chopping wood, and there was a limb on a piece of tree, and he just let his axe swing, and it came down with an intense blow. And she said, oh, boy, to herself, he's probably sick of my complaining. And he just happened to look over at her, and he said, honey, come on over here. And she goes, oh, boy, now what's gone wrong? So she didn't know what to expect. He said, now, I think things are going to work out just fine. You just needed a reminder. And then what he did, he handed her up the piece of wood he had been chopping. She turned it around in her hands, and she couldn't believe it. He said, take a look, hon. Inside the limb, the cut revealed a hole. Mm-hmm. Shaped just like a heart. Well, she said it wasn't too long after that. Her husband found a job, and the kids adjusted to being in the new school. And she finally was able to do some of the relaxation she had wanted to do so very, very much. She said, you just never know. And who would have thought my husband, in cutting the limb of a tree, would have found that serendipitous sign that I always looked for, the shape of a heart. She said, what a place to leave a love note by the universe. I like that one. I hope you did too. Well, I know we're coming close to the end of the show. Tomorrow again, we're going to be talking with Michael Anthony. Mass casualties is going to be our discussion. We'll be talking about the soldiers who are doing the best they can to help preserve what we experience here and as the way of freedom and not having to be involved in war ourselves. So we just need to be very grateful for that, and I appreciate this young man being on the air with us tomorrow. Also, don't forget, if you have a special story, send it to me. I'd love to hear from you. Oh, and I wanted to remind those of you that might be listening in Alaska, I'm going to be going up to Alaska in April. My time and planning has changed, so that is going to be evolving there. Tomorrow I'm going to be sharing with you how you can get paid to have fun surfing the net. I'm telling you, this world of ours is going through a big adjustment. So if you're down and out and feeling frustrated because you haven't been able to find a job, I'm going to have some tips to share with you tomorrow. This is Donna Sebo. Remember always, you are the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Don't ever give up on life, because it's an adventure you're here to experience in its finest and its best form. So if you're going through some tough times, realize, just like steel in a furnace, you're being honed and toned to be the best you possibly can be. So buckle up, put a smile on your face, and get out and enjoy life and the many blessings you have. We'll be talking to you tomorrow, same time, same place. This is Donna. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.